Good morning. John Munson in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network. A recent survey revealed that about 80% of the youth in this particular study said their parents were more concerned with their achievement or happiness than whether they cared for others. That's a problem. We need to be teaching our children how to be respectful and caring adults, don't we? Well, we'll talk about that this hour. My guest is Richard Weisbord, a psychologist in the Harvard Graduate School of Education. He directs the Making Caring Common Project, an organization that teaches kids to be kind. He was recently interviewed for an article in the Washington Post titled, Are You Raising Nice Kids? Richard Weisbord, welcome to the Joy Cardine Show.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
So, you know, I guess until I read the article that prompted this this program, I had assumed that all parents wanted to raise their children to be respectful and caring adults. It sounds like we're much more focused on raising successful adults than we are on raising adults that respect each other. Why is that, do you think?
Well, in fact, if you ask parents, and this is not what we did in our study, but other researchers have asked parents what's most important to you in child raising, they often say caring for others. They say caring for others is more important than achievement, than their kids' achievement. What we found is that when you ask kids, what do you imagine are your parents' child raising priorities, like what's most important to your parents for you, they don't say caring, they say achievement and happiness second. So parents are saying that caring is most important, but that's not what they're conveying. There's a rhetoric reality gap, a gap between what parents are saying and kids are hearing. So that's what we were concerned about. In answer to your question, I think a lot of parents are very anxious about their kids succeeding. They're very anxious about their kids achieving at a high level. Sometimes the most anxious parents don't really have that much to worry about. They're affluent parents whose kids are really going to do quite fine, and they're frantic about their kids going to an Ivy League school when their kids are going to do fine if they go to a whole range of colleges. Sometimes those achievement concerns are very legitimate, and we're not arguing that parents shouldn't be concerned about their kids' achievement. We are just saying that it needs to be balanced. You can achieve at a high level and be caring at a high level, and we're just arguing that it needs to be balanced, that we need to be focused as much or more on our kids being good people and good citizens as on their achievements and their happiness.
So why is it important to raise nice kids?
Well, it's an inherently important from my point of view. I mean, it's important. First of all, we're not just saying nice kids. We're really saying moral kids, kids who can consider the common good, who are fair, who are good citizens, who deal with others respectfully. But that's the glue of society. That's the glue of any healthy society, that people care about others and put others' needs on a par with their own. So I do think it's very important to raise nice kids. We are also making the case that kids who are kind, who are able to tune into other people, who are able to take responsibility for other people, who have empathy, they're going to have better relationships their whole lives. They're going to be better parents and mentors and romantic partners and friends. And those relationships are, maybe the most important source of happiness that we have. So, niceness is important from my point of view, first and foremost, because it is the basis of a moral society and moral behavior. But it's also true that, I think people who are nice tend to have better relationships and to be happier.
Is there a certain age by which we need to have inculcated these values in children, or it's too late?
I think it's never too late. So, there are examples of people really developing, becoming less selfish, developing more of a focus on other people late in life. There's a lot of evidence that people have capacity to change in adulthood and in adolescence many ways is a bad name in our country. We think of adolescence as selfish, but a lot of adolescents, in fact, are very other-centered, and I think we should make demands on them, too, around respecting other people and taking responsibility for other people.
Well, and adolescents are pretty busy finding out who the heck they are and discovering all sorts of new things about themselves that may be confusing or concerning. We put a lot of pressure on adolescents to do a lot of things during what is admittedly a very tumultuous period in their lives.
Yeah, no, I think I think you're totally right. I think it is a tumultuous period. It's a tumultuous period hormonally. It's a tumultuous period because they're in the very difficult, loaded terrain of romantic relationships, often for the first time. It's loaded, too, because a lot of them are trying to figure out, as you said, who they are and what their next step is, you know, who they want to be. So, I do think it's a loaded time. But I also think, you know, when you look at some of the most exciting things going on in the country in terms of caring for others and community engagement and community service, it's generated by adolescents. I mean, adolescents are also very capable of mobilizing behind good causes. They can be very tuned into others, very intimate, very caring. And so, you know, again, I don't think these things are incompatible. I think you can achieve at a high level and be focused on others and be caring.
Some of the cultural modeling we have I'll just speak for the United States today, but some of the cultural modeling, the modeling that we see in our media, the behavior of adults seems to go against the idea that respecting others and having empathy is something that we ought to pursue. Rather, it's every man for himself. In some cases, is what some people call crab bucket thinking. If someone else succeeds, that means I don't, and therefore I need to compete. I need to be number one. I need to achieve financial success. You need to defeat your opponent. And we stress competition and acquisition by the way we have behaved. And we're culturally modeling a set of values that seems to run counter to the whole idea of empathy and getting along and helping each other.
Yeah, no, I think you're raising another very important point. And, one of the things that, one of the stats that we cite in the study, and I'm not going to get this exactly right, but it's about 55-58% of kids say that, you know, in adult life, you have to cheat at times to get by. There is an awareness, I think, among kids that, you know, there are a lot of kids who are pretty cynical about adult life and do view it as simply as a competition, and that they're going to get left in the dust, as you said, if they don't compete at a high level. But I think there are a couple of big problems with that. I mean, you know, one is that in fact, there's quite good research that to succeed in many, this is Adam Grant's research, for example, you know, that to succeed in many business settings, you have to be able to collaborate. You know, you do have to be able to work with other people. You have to be able to tune in to other people and take other perspectives, think about how the group functions. So you can't function just individually. I also think, you know, it would not be a good world if people at work didn't feel like they could help out a colleague because it was going to hurt their own interests in some way, if a colleague was sick, they wouldn't do some extra work for that colleague, even if it might hurt them in some respect. I mean, you know, this is what I mean about a healthy moral society. I think we have to prepare our kids to make sacrifices for other people, and we're going to be in a lot of trouble if it really is just a dog-eat-dog world out there.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion about how to raise nice kids and how to raise children who have empathy, who respect others, who are moral people, and why that's important. We're talking about that this hour with Richard Weisbord, who is a psychologist in the Harvard Graduate School of Education, where he directs the Making Caring Common Project. And his recent article in the Washington Post, Are You Raising Nice Kids?, was the genesis for this discussion. Parents, how do you instill values of empathy and caring for others in your children? Or how did you? Maybe you've already raised your kids. How do you want your kids to grow up to be caring, respectful adults? And if so, what things are you doing to see that this happens? What behaviors are you modeling for them? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Share your stories. Or perhaps you've got a question. That's also welcome. If you succeeded in raising children who are respectful and empathetic, then, well, tell us how you did it. We'd love to know. 800-642-1234. We also have an email address, talk@WPR.org, or you can go to the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page and leave your comment or question there. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. If we want to raise moral children, we have to do it on purpose. And there are some things we can do. We'll talk about that this hour with Richard Weisbord and with you. If you choose to join us at 800-642-1234, send an email to talk@WPR.org or post your comment or question to the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine. There are a number of ways that you suggest for parents to proceed here, but what's the most important thing that a parent can do to make caring a priority in your child's upbringing?
Well, it is hard to distill it to just one thing, but you know, I would say that we really have to, you know, walk the talk about this. We really do have to make it a priority. And by walk the talk, I mean two things. You know, it has to become part of, woven into kids' daily lives. You know, kids should be helping out around the house. They should be doing chores. They should be pitching in with neighbors. We should expect them to be respectful to us and to our friends. They should be friendly to and grateful to the bus driver, the school custodian, a waitress. I mean, these day-to-day things, they need to practice. You know, in many ways, it's like learning an instrument or learning a sport. I mean, kids need to practice it from early ages. Part of the walking the talk, too, is that we have to model these things ourselves. So, you know, we have to get kids to practice and have high ethical expectations, but we have to practice and have high ethical expectations ourselves. We have to be grateful to people who are helping us in our day-to-day lives. We have to show kindness and concern for a wide range of people. We need to treat each other respectfully. We need to listen to our kids respectfully and demonstrate to them how you listen to another human being respectfully. So if I were to highlight one thing, it would be our walking the talk about this.
Mm-hmm. I heard a piece of advice once, and I forget who it was, that said if you want to raise happy children, love your wife, and let your children know that you know that you do. And the same would be true, you know, for the wives, love your husbands, love your spouse, show your children that you love your spouse, and that's a good thing. And that kind of empathy and caring is something then that children see and they say, oh, because children imitate their parents. They see what we do, and then that's how they learn what they're supposed to do. If we show them what that looks like, it's not like we really have to sit down and have a curriculum, is it?
Well, you know, I think there are a couple things here. So I do think that when kids respect and trust their parents, they want to be like them. So I think that's right. But I don't think kids want to imitate their parents if they don't respect and trust them. And there are kids who don't respect and trust their parents. You know, there are also a lot of kids who, you know, the reality is they're not growing up with parents who are demonstrating love for each other. You know, half of marriages are ending in divorce. And about, you know, probably roughly half of people who are married, you know, it looks like, and I don't have good research on this, but I have been looking into this, half of people who are married are not happily married. So, you know, that's roughly three-quarters of kids who probably aren't growing up with parents who are, you know, actively in very positive love relationships. So we got to figure out how those kids can become kind, too, when they're not exposed to those relationships. But the other issue is that, you know, almost everybody is caring and kind to somebody. The issue is who they're caring and kind to and who they have empathy for. So parents may be very empathic with each other. Kids may have a lot of empathy for their parents, for their close friends, but they may not have empathy for somebody from a different race or class or culture or somebody suffering from a disability or somebody suffering from poverty in another country or the bus driver or the custodian or, you know, a whole range of other people. Boys may not have empathy for girls or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of it is who you have empathy for, and that's part of what I think parents really need to do. You know, you asked me to focus on one thing, which, you know, made sense that I did that, but the other, you know, another thing that parents really need to do is to expand kids' circle of concern, you know, so they don't just care about their family and close friends, but they do care about people who are different from them and people who are vulnerable in some ways. You know, in some ways, it's like teaching kids to zoom in and to zoom out. To zoom in meaning to really be able to have empathy for and listen and care about a person in a situation, but also to zoom out and take the big picture and take multiple perspectives of the people they interact with day to day and care about those perspectives.
Let's take a phone call. We'll go to Madison and hear from John first this morning. John, good morning.
Hi. There's a parent in every household that shouldn't be ignored, and that's the television. I think the average kid spends between 4 and 6 hours in front of the screen every day. And from my standpoint, the TV teaches consumerism, you know, happiness through purchasing. It teaches nationalism, a rosy view of American foreign policy and history that's entirely inappropriate as far as I'm concerned. And it also teaches them that violence is out there all over the place. In other words, an exaggerated view of the violence in society. And I'm just wondering what your recommendations are for TV viewing for parents, and also are there age-appropriate morals to teach to kids? In other words, would you teach reciprocity or the golden rule to a 5-year-old versus an 8-year-old versus a 10 or 12-year-old?
So these are great questions. I you know, in terms of TV watching, I think you are absolutely correct. I think it is about four to six hours a day, and I'm not sure how much of that is actual TV and how much of it is screen time. I actually think when you add TV and screen time, you know, computer time, it gets to be more like 5 to 6 hours a day. That's an enormous amount of time. You know, I do think that parents need to a few things, and it depends how old your child is, too, certainly. I mean, in terms of what kids are watching on TV, but I guess I would recommend three things. You know, one is limiting the amount of screen time kids are watching. There are kids who are watching TV, you know, at 5, 6 years old until 10 or 11 at night. And, you know, we know this from research. And I think kids should be getting to bed with a book at 8 o'clock or 8:30. And so, you know, you really do need to think about reducing screen time from TV watching from 4 hours a day, if it's that, to, you know, maybe an hour a day. The other is, you know, monitoring what kids are watching, because I do think that kids are watching an enormous amount of crap out there that really is not helpful in terms of any kind of development, moral development, emotional development, social development. So, you know, some care about what kids are watching. And the third thing is that, you know, I think parents should be literate about what their kids are watching, not only to monitor it, but because they can have meaningful conversations with their kids about it. So they can, you know, if they're watching a TV show, kids are watching a TV show, you know, sometimes you can't predict if kids are going to see something on the TV that's upsetting to them or inappropriate for them or implants an idea in them that's troubling. And so, you know, I think parents have to be on top of that kind of thing to the extent they can, and talking to their kids about what they're watching on TV.
And we only have about a minute before we have to go to the news. We mentioned TV and we talked about screen time, but video games are certainly a big part of the screen time that children have, and a lot of those aren't exactly full of empathy and other positive moral values.
Yes, I would say the same thing about video, that, you know, it's limiting the amount of time kids are on video. It's monitoring some of the games. Some of the games, you know, are about killing police officers, you know, things that we do not want our kids doing, and particularly at young ages, we don't want them doing. And talking to them about about the games themselves. So I would emphasize all three things. In terms of your question about morals, I just think as kids, I mean, this is a complicated, good question, but as kids get older, I think you can start talking to them about principles of fairness and justice in adolescence, you know, more how systems function, how the country functions, and whether it's just.
Yeah. We have to go to the news. We'll be back and continue our discussion, and welcome your calls at 800-642-1234. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Joy Cardine Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stick around. We'll be right back. We're talking about how to raise your children to be empathetic, caring, respectful, and responsible adults. This hour on the Ideas Network, John Munson in for Joy Cardine. Good morning. My guest is Richard Weisbrod, a psychologist in the Harvard Graduate School of Education. He directs the Making Caring Common Project, an organization that teaches kids to be kind. And he was recently interviewed for an article in the Washington Post titled, Are You Raising Nice Kids? And that's where we got the idea for this show. So we have some comments on Facebook I think would be good to talk about here as we resume our discussion. Gaia on Facebook writes, treat your children with respect, acknowledge their feelings, don't place gender stereotypes on them or other children, don't hit, spanking is hitting, love them even at their worst, and take them camping. That's what Gaia says on Facebook. Richard Weisbord, what do you think about that?
I think it's all good advice. I'm all for all of those things. You know, some parents might not enjoy camping, but I think the idea of getting away with your kids and spending some time alone is super important. You know, I would emphasize one other thing. You know, I do think that some parents think that if they're just kind and model kindness, that their kids will become kind. But, you know, sometimes we do have a problem of some parents really indulging their kids, of organizing their lives around their kids. And I don't think that teaches kids to be kind. I think it teaches kids that other people are going to organize their lives around them.
Well, it certainly seems to give a sense of entitlement.
That's what I worry about. That it gives a sense of entitlement. So, you know, I think you have to be kind to your kids and teach your kids to be kind, but I also think you have to have, this is why I was also emphasizing, having high ethical expectations of them, you know, expecting them to respect others, punishing them when they don't respect other people, or, you know, getting angry at them when they don't respect other people, having expectations that they're going to help out and not praising every time they help out around the house. Every time, you know, there's some households where, you know, a kid clears the table and it's like they think they should get a trophy or there should be a parade. You know, those are kind of things that you should expect. Those aren't kind of things that you want to make a big fuss about. And I think you should praise uncommon acts of kindness, not those kind of day-to-day things. So I think, you know, I agree with the statement, but I would add, you know, holding kids to high standards and ethical expectations, even if they get angry at you, you got to keep doing that.
It seems to me that it puts an awful lot of pressure on a child to be the center of their parents' universe, don't you think?
I do. I mean, I think it can. And I also think that, you know, some kids really have a hard time when that happens, you know, entering the world of peers where, you know, they're not going to be the center of attention and where they are going to have to share attention with other people. And, you know, one of the things that we really need to teach them how to do is how to focus on other people, how to, you know, not make their needs the most important, how to get focused on other people's needs. You can go to playgrounds. I'm not, you know, I assume this is true in some playgrounds in Wisconsin. It's true around here where you see parents who are hyper-focused on their kids' moods every moment, you know. It's like the mood police are out there noting kids' feelings every 10 minutes. Are you frustrated? Are you sad? Are you angry? And it's very important to help kids to identify their feelings and articulate their feelings. But it can make kids self-involved. And I do think, you know, in many ways, it's just as important to get kids to focus on other kids' feelings on the playground and for parents to be tuned into other kids' feelings on the playground.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a call. We'll take a call next from Dennis in Princeton. Dennis, hello.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Good,
great.
Dennis.
Go ahead.
All right. So I had a question. I know it's difficult to get children to open up and provide answers to questions, and especially nuanced questions. Now, my wife and I attempt to raise our kids to be empathetic and nice, but I would suspect if they were asked a question to choose between empathy or success as a stark choice, we've raised them to believe that true success comes from being able to be financially successful or comfortable while being empathetic, and that they would choose success as the answer rather than empathetic because, of course, in their minds, as we've raised them, being empathetic and helpful is a part of being successful. And I'm wondering how you were able to ferret out the nuance when you were going about your study.
So this is a great question. I think, you know, as I said earlier, we don't see anything incompatible about being caring, empathetic, and successful. And so what you're doing, the kind of parenting you're doing, you know, from our perspective, we're cheering for you because you're emphasizing both things. You're emphasizing kids being successful and they're being caring. In our study, you know, we ask this question a number of ways. We also ask, are your parents prouder of you if you get a good grade or if you're a caring person at school? And kids are about three times more likely to say their parents are proud of me if I get a good grade. And that is concerning to us. You know, that does distress me. And it's, you know, it's distressing because, you know, I think the bottom, you know, as I've said, the bottom line is that we have to be caring for other people. That affects a lot of people, whether we're caring people. It's going to affect everybody at school. And I certainly think parents should convey that it is as important, if not more important, that their kids are good people than if they get good grades. So, you know, that's the place that upsets me. I will also say that from a research perspective, we asked open-ended questions. So we asked, why did you rank these things the way you ranked them, caring, achievement, happiness, et cetera? And some kids gave an answer like you just suggested, which is, if I'm caring, I will be more successful. But some kids also said, I really just care about achieving. You know, that's really what I value. And if I have some excess energy, I might care about other people. But as John said earlier, the view was, some kids, that it's a dog-eat-dog world out there. So you basically really should just look out for yourself.
Dennis, thanks for the call. Let's take a call from Sandy in Newburgh next. Sandy, hello.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Good program. I'm glad you have this on. I was remarking that, you know, some of these concepts, you know, justice, ethics, morals, they're too big for really little kids. But, you know, that is when you have to start, is when they're small. But you know what? They can understand compassion because they know how they feel. And if you don't have compassion, you'll never get any of those other things. You'll never get justice and morals, and you won't get ethics. So, you know, starting with compassion, you know, they can understand, how does the cat feel when we don't give the cat the water? You know, what does the, do we need to put seeds in the bird feeder for the birds? You know, starting with small things like animals, and then your friends, your family, and it just goes on and on. And you can expand this out as they get older, and older, and then bring in, you know, how that does affect, you know, a culture and a society as a whole as they can begin to understand those larger concepts. Now, both of my kids were raised the same. They're both between 35 and 40 years old. One of them is the model and the picture of compassion, morals, ethics, and justice on every possible level. The first to volunteer, the first to extend a hand, the first to sign up for the jobs nobody wants. You know, he'll do all that, does it cheerfully, does it quietly, kind of flies under the radar. He's always the step-up guy in our family. The other one that's all about her, will not do anything unless asked or begged or paid, just doesn't get it. And you know what? I don't know what happened there. We just say it's a genetic defect. There's nothing we can do about it, apparently. But, you know, and I also believe that, you know, along the line, given any amount of training, it doesn't matter if you're an employee, a child, a parent, a spouse, whatever, any amount of training, you're still going to make your own choices with what's comfortable for you. And, you know, at a certain point, once kids get past 14 years old, I think, you know, your training, you've done everything you can perhaps by then, and maybe you can still do, you know, some more to fine-tune it. But I think their impressions are made between 7 and 14 pretty solidly. And they're going to use that information to go out and then develop finally the people they'll ultimately become. And we're just along for the ride as parents at that point.
Sandy, thanks for the call. Rick?
Well, I would say a couple things. You know, one is that I do think empathy, I was saying empathy, you were saying compassion. By empathy, I meant a version of compassion. So I do think empathy, compassion is something you can teach kids from very early ages. A lot of kids feel empathy, a certain form of empathy from birth. I mean, they will cry when they hear another child crying. And I do think expanding kids' circle of empathy, you know, what I was saying before, having them empathize for people who are different from them at a later point, as you said, does become the basis of justice. I also think kids, of their sense of justice, their commitment to justice, I also think kids are capable, you know, often learn other values by the time they're 5 or 6 years old. Kids know what honesty is, for example. They have some sense of fairness. So I think these are values that you can teach kids from early ages. I think it'll, you know, they can learn more complex values, and they can learn what to do when values conflict as kids get older. They're much more able to sort through moral dilemmas and figure out what to do when honesty and loyalty conflict, which can happen all the time. So I agree with that point. I would say about the point of, you know, I think as parents, even when we have older kids, you use the expression fine-tuning. You know, I think that we do always have some responsibility, if we can do it appropriately and constructively, to remind our kids, no matter how old they are, that if, you know, it's not okay to be disrespectful if we see them being disrespectful. I think how people turn out and whether they're moral is the result of a very complex interaction between many things. It's their biology, it's us as parents, it's their peers, it's other influences that they've had in their lives from adults and from other people. It's a very intricate, complex interaction. It's not one factor. It's many factors in how they interact. But I do think as parents, we play the biggest role. So I think we have to keep trying to exert that role the best we can.
We need to take a break. When we come back, Rick, I'd like you to discuss a little bit about how race and class and culture issues affect raising moral kids. We'll get to that and some other questions between now and the end of the program. In just a moment, I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. How to raise moral children who are empathetic or compassionate, who care about others and can be good citizens in our society. That's what we're talking about this hour with Richard Weisbord, psychologist in the Harvard Graduate School of Education, who directs the Making Caring Common Project. So what about the role of race and culture, factors like that in how children progress and how they develop into moral beings?
Well, you know, one of the things I was going to say, and I really appreciate the question, one of the things I was going to say is that in interpreting, you know, our data, you know, kids ranking achievement first and happiness second and caring third. You know, what that means varies a lot by race and class and culture. So, you know, there are low-income kids, there are working-class kids, you know, for whom achievement is about supporting their families or pitching in their communities or helping out their communities. So in those cases, achievement has a very moral purpose. Sometimes it's about, you know, honoring their parents. For immigrant kids, it's often about honoring their parents. It's not about going to an Ivy League school. It's not about status. It's not about having, you know, gobs of money. So I think the meaning of these words varies by race, class, and culture. You know, I also think the pathways and the challenges for kids vary. You know, for affluent kids, often the challenge is, you know, not to be entitled, to be able to have empathy for people who are not as privileged as you are. For low-income kids, the challenge can be very different. It can be, it can be dealing with a sense that you got a raw deal. You know, that the world is has been stacked against you in certain ways, and it is unjust. And it's helping kids learn how to deal with injustice. So I just think there are important race, class, and culture differences here that we should be mindful about.
And then what about the role that others play? We've been talking a lot about how parents can act to raise moral children. What about the role of friends and relatives, people in the community? What's their responsibility here?
Well, you know, it's a very good question. I think it's everybody's responsibility. You know, in terms of child raising, I think this is the most important thing that we can do. So and I think everybody can pitch in. You know, I think there are cultures, there have been times in our history where if a kid was doing something very rude or disrespectful at a playground, adults other than parents would feel permitted to intervene. And, you know, I do think that we should live in a society where adults are not bystanders, you know, where when, you know, particularly if a kid is getting bullied or in some way or a kid is really getting hurt. Adults will intervene in those situations, not parents. You know, kids are not just watching their parents, too. They're watching their uncles and aunts and relatives. So, you know, what those adults model is very important as well. They're also, you know, sports coaches can be very important mentors for kids. So, you know, some more training for sport coaches about how to be a moral model and how to be a moral mentor for kids would be helpful, too. So, you know, there are lots of things lots of adults can do.
Here's a comment from Karen on Facebook who writes, "My strong-willed, independent son always uses please, thank you, and no thank you when he's getting what he wants or declining what he doesn't want. He learned from me that you can be firm and fair without being mean."
I think that's great parenting. You can be firm and fair without being mean, I think is right. This brings up another issue, which is, you know, parents really should be helping their kids develop conflict resolution strategies. A lot of times, you know, we think the issue when kids do something wrong is that they don't know right from wrong. But almost all kids, by the time they're 5 or 6 years old, have a basic, you know, a pretty general basic sense of right and wrong. The reason that they transgress, the reason they violate other people, and this is true for adults often too. I mean, think of all your listeners out there, think about a time you did something wrong. It probably isn't because you didn't know what was right from wrong. It was because you were dealing with a feeling that you couldn't manage. It was envy, whether it was envy or anger or shame or greed, or, you know, all these feelings we deal with day to day and that can get the better of us sometimes and can cause us to violate our own standards, our own ethical standards. And that's true for kids, too. So, you know, a lot of what good parenting is about is also about helping kids manage those feelings, deal with conflict in constructive ways.
Yeah, because it's real, you know, it's one thing to be kind and considerate when you're having a good day and the world looks great.
Yes.
But when things are really going south and you're having an awful day, you're maybe frustrated or angry or whatever, it's a different story.
No, I think that's right. I mean, I think this is where, you know, push comes to shove. It's true for kids. It's true for us as adults, too. You know, we've had a long day. We're irritable. But we might be depressed. And we still have to, you know, treat our kids respectfully. And, you know, as respectful as we can, and we, you know, it's still important to be kind, and that's where it gets really hard. So those are things, you know, reasons why parents need to do their best to take care of themselves, too. You know, try and find times to get a break, to meditate, to do, to get exercise, whatever you need to do to be able to take care of yourself.
Now, there are, well, we're starting to run out of time. Are there some points you'd like to make that we haven't touched on yet?
No, I think we've touched on the major point. I think that one thing, very simple thing, you know, if I could leave people with a couple things in particular, it's, you know, rather than telling your kids the most important thing is that you're happy, I think we might tell our kids the most important thing is that you're kind and that you act with integrity, or that you're kind and that you're happy. I mean, happiness is clearly very important as well. You know, in these day-to-day ways, I think we are prioritizing our kids' well-being over their concern for others. So I think that's an important thing to pay attention to.
And, you know, it sometimes there's a perception that kindness equals weakness, that if you're kind, that means you're not strong. How do we get past that?
You know, I think you're right. I think there is that perception. But it's you know, I just think it's a wrong-headed, it's a mistaken perception. You know, you can be very firm and very kind at the same time. And as a child-raising matter, you know, we have to teach kids to be self-respecting, to stand up for themselves, and to be kind. You can be both those things. There's nothing soft about being kind by, you know, in and of itself. And sometimes it can take a lot of courage to be kind, particularly to people who are vulnerable and victims. You know, if you're standing up for a bully, you can become a target yourself. Standing up to a bully, you can become a target yourself. So kindness can take real courage, too. It's not soft at all.
Where can we find out more about the Making Caring Common project?
Well, thank you for asking. If you look at our website, if you go to makingcaringcommon.org, we have a lot of resources there for parents. We have resources for schools. And we have resources about raising kind and caring kids, but also about developing many other capacities in kids that are important. And you can sign up for our email list, and we promise we won't bombard you with emails.
We will
give you ideas periodically.
That would be a treat. Richard Weisbord, thanks so much for spending this time with us today.
It's been great. Thank you so much.
The website, makingcaringcommon.org. You can check that out online. Richard Weisbord is a psychologist in the Harvard Graduate School of Education who directs the Making Caring Common project, an organization that teaches kids to be kind. Well, be kind to each other today. That would be our word for you. John Munson in for Joy Cardine. Coming up next, we'll talk about Congressman Ryan's most recent proposal to deal with poverty. It's pretty interesting. We'll get a couple of different perspectives on that. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.